Morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have a very interesting show for you today. This is one of those shows where I have absolutely no idea where it's going to go, but at the end of the show, we all wind up as friends. We wind up learning, sharing, but for this show, I invite you to go ahead and grab your recorder, go ahead and grab your notepad, because you will want to take notes. One of the things that we're learning today is how to porn-proof your world for your children with our first guest, Mr. Joshua Shea. Good morning, Joshua. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm doing quite well. How are you this Friday morning?
I'm excited to have the opportunity to sit down and talk to you once again. Our audience may recognize your name, your face, and they will most likely recognize your passion because you've been a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show and Face-to-Face Talk Show several times, trying to heal the world, save the world. Talk to us about what you're passionate about, Joshua.
Ultimately, my passion these days is pornography addiction and educating the world about it and trying to help those who are either addicted or especially those who are the partners of porn addicts get through their traumatic situation. I truly believe that if society in general does not start paying attention to pornography addiction, if parents do not start addressing pornography addiction with their kids, we are going to be looking at one of the real healthcare crises of the next 20, 30 years. And for people who don't know anything about pornography addiction, I know that seems, you know, a little bit out there, but in the last 20 years, the statistics, since we now have high-speed internet, concerning the 18 to 30 year old age group, absolutely blow everybody else out of the water. The internet is changing the world when it comes to pornography, when it comes to healthy sexuality versus unhealthy sexuality, and nobody's talking about it. I am a former addict myself. I've written 3 books, doing a TED Talk this weekend. I have an online seminar for partners of porn addicts. So I just think that society in so many different facets needs to understand this. I don't want people to end up where I did or my family did. And, you know, I have this calling to talk about it. Don't know where it comes from, but here I am yet again, and I'm glad to be here.
I think, you know, and I always tell people I have absolutely no degrees. I graduated from the School of Hard Knocks. I think I was the valedictorian. But so I don't know the details of this. But I would say that part of your passion is because, like you briefly mentioned, is that your world imploded. Like when we think of pornography, most people think it's harmless. Nothing will happen. I watched a couple of movies. I look at a couple of magazines and everything will be okay. But you know, that's not true.
No, absolutely. And I think that more people need to understand that pornography addiction is just like every other addiction when it comes to what's happening between the brain or between the ears. You know, obviously, each addiction has different side effects. You're more likely to go bankrupt if you're a gambling addict. You're more likely to have heart disease if you're a food addict. You know, drug addicts and alcoholics have other things go wrong with their internal systems. As a porn addict, it's almost like a cancer of the mind and how it warps your sexuality, how it changes your view of the world. And that's what happened with me. And I never could have believed that pornography was a problem. I actually discovered my pornography addiction as a diagnosable condition when I was in inpatient rehab for alcoholism. We all know about alcoholism. We all take that seriously. We all know that, you know, it's a disease and there are ways to get help. But if you look at the texts out there, like the diagnostic statistics of manuals used by most mental health professionals in the U.S., even alcoholism was a personality disorder until the 1970s. Science is just starting to understand this. And there are a lot of people who are hesitant to call this a real addiction. But I can tell you, my alcoholism, my porn addiction were on parallel paths. I use them for very similar reasons. They went hand in hand with each other. So, you know, I just want people to understand that how your world can implode from drug abuse, how your world can implode from alcoholism or gambling addiction. Your world can implode from pornography addiction, and you want to get it taken care of either in yourself or a loved one before it's too late.
One of the things that you mentioned was the downsides of pornography, not just your life imploding, but the way you see the world. As far as, you know, I think the phrase that you used was like not seeing them as a person, not humanizing them.
Well, that's what happens with everybody, with your partner. You know, a lot of times you'll stop having sex with them, not necessarily because of libido, because that's what happens with addicts. So then you're starting to use your addiction, you know, for so many different reasons, including a sexual outlet. And when you look at the person on the screen, you're not looking at them as a well-formed person. You know, entity. You know, if you're watching a dirty video or something, are you really thinking about that human being on the screen, or are you just objectifying them? Now, everybody has to determine their own level of morality for, you know, what they will allow into their house, what they will allow into their mind and their heart. But I can tell you, I have probably at this point read well over 100 studies on pornography addiction, whether it's how it affects your kids, how it affects your marriage, general attitudes towards sexuality. I have never read a study that reaches the conclusion that porn is a good thing, ever. You know, no matter what the topic or what the specific area is, it never reaches the conclusion pornography helped in this. So, you know, ultimately, it's a harmful substance. And, you know, I believe that much like any other thing, like whether it's gambling, whether it's drinking, there are people who can handle it, but that still doesn't necessarily make it a safe and healthy behavior.
Absolutely. Now, Joshua, we are going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. His focus with his company is a little different. Now, he has a marketing company, but his main focus is on health and wellness. So we do have to keep the world healthier. Mr. Joshua Kennedy is the founder of Imagine Marketing, a new performance marketing network with a focus on sustainable health and wellness brands. He has a background in digital marketing, having built and scaled internal affiliate programs from scratch to millions of dollars per year. Good morning, Joshua. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing well. How's everybody else doing?
We are excited to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on this morning. Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of introduction about myself and my company and kind of what I'm doing. So, like I said, I've been in digital marketing for the past 3 or 4 years and kind of on a whim had started, I started working for a health and wellness company and on a whim started doing this affiliate marketing program and creating from scratch. So just kind of figured out how it worked, looked at sort of competitors to understand how this whole system worked and how these relationships were created, and laid everything out and then ended up being very successful with it. Then after a couple of years, I decided if I can do this sort of as an entrepreneur within a company, then I can probably do this for myself outside of a company. So I started Imagine Marketing in January of this year. I do want to focus on, you know, just primarily sustainable brands. So sustainable brands being anything, can even be things like fashion. We have a lithium battery company, which basically just like, can, you know, uses electricity and in a more efficient way. We've got air purifier manufacturers that work with us that sort of cleanse the air, can be placed in, you know, we have, families that we work with in terms of, you know, putting air purifiers in their newborns' rooms, cleansing the air of pet odors. And so just, you know, there's a variety of products under that sort of umbrella of health and wellness that we work with, but that's primarily where we want to work. So essentially what I do is I have, it's now becoming more of a network. So it's a marketing company, but it's really, we're really a host for all these health and wellness companies to meet with advertisers and promoters basically through technology. So it's, you know, a network takes a little bit more time to build, but in the future, what I see is, you know, a lot of, like I said, sustainable health and wellness brands on one side, and then a lot of people that fit that that category and are able to promote. And so that's across. And then what's going to happen is these people are going to be able to come together and they're going to be able to create long-term, hopefully meaningful revenue for both parties. And on under me, something new that I've started, which I'm pretty excited about and I've started doing onboarding for, is I'm also sort of doing this. It's a little bit similar to network marketing, but it's not exactly, but it's more of a training platform for people to come under me, just because I'm trying to outsource some of the relationship building side. So, but I'm actually going to give those people about 75% of the revenue that they earn or they bring into the company. So I'm taking a small cut, but trying to empower basically this other community of people in order to do the same thing, is to make sort of long-term passive income where they help me, but I'm definitely in reinvesting in them. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Wonderful. You got your 30-second elevator pitch down pat. Everything was right there. Why health and wellness, Josh?
Well, I mean, I can tell you personally that health and wellness is super important. Actually, one thing is that, you know, they tend to, it's a popular category sort of for digital marketing in terms of there's always new sort of health and wellness brands. So it makes it a good market. I would like to shift into a little bit. We do have if you're familiar, we're working with a company too called Marissa Peer. And so she's like a leading like therapist and hypnotist and stuff. So we do sort of go into the mental health category too. So, I mean, you know, I see it as just, that's sort of my back, you know, that's not sort of my background, but also to just, you know, obviously caring about the general well-being of, you know, people, myself, and then really sort of not just working with for-profit companies, but companies that sort of have some sort of mission statement or some sort of desire to improve, like I said, people's well-being or their customers' lives beyond just selling them or retaining them as a customer. So that's kind of where I come in on that.
Mm-hmm. Usually when I find people in the health and wellness industry, there's usually some aspect of their story or someone around, you know, in their circle story where they said, you know what, I have to make sure people have better health because my mother suffered from breast cancer or my dad had this illness. So this is what I learned and I want to help other people. Just like when you look at Joshua Shea, Joshua's life as a kid was one way. His life imploded. He said, you know what, I'm not going to let this happen to anyone else. Was there something like a driving passion for you that said, you know what, I'm going to help health and wellness companies get out there, get known, and promote their brands?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, you know, I definitely have sort of one of the things that I'm working with on a company right now is I do have sort of cancer that runs in my family. And so there is a company that sort of reinvests into cancer research. And there's another one, that same company actually does a lot of things in terms of social awareness. So they also, for like the lesbian, gay, like LGBT community, they reinvest a lot just because one of the owner's sisters actually had committed suicide, I think back in 2011. So they had kind of committed an entire brand or entire basically arm of their business in order to, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I think that I do have certain, you know, familial issues, but more it's just like you'll get to see, because I'm partnering with so many different brands, you'll get to see sort of unique and individual sort of you know, protocols or agendas that these people are running to, like I said, for a particular reason, who's maybe might have been more personally impacted than I have been.
That's okay too. As long as you're out there helping the world, solving some of our problems, that's the most important thing. I'm going to come back to you, Josh. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Katie Green. Katie has been in the equipment service side of the hospitality industry for 20 years. She serves on the leadership team for her organization, RSI. She is currently on the board of directors for CFESA and works closely with the Young Professional Committee of that organization. Good morning. Good morning, Katie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Thank you
for joining. So, Sebessa, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Let me tell y'all a little bit about Sebessa. It is our trade organization. Now, Sharifa, I think I heard you say that your dad owns a HVAC and plumbing company.
Well, you were doing your homework. You were watching yesterday's show.
Always. So, you know, we are kind of similar. We're in the service industry and we do the commercial side of the service for the food equipment. So think about your restaurants, your hotels, your hospitals, your schools, anything commercial. And it's hot and cold. So it's the refrigeration, ice machine, beer systems, ovens, grills. We keep the back of the house running for them. So we're kind of in the shadows, so to speak. We're in the background, but we are very vital to the infrastructure of every community. So I am on the board of directors. I've been in the industry at the same company for 20 years. So it was a summer job that never ended.
Now, that is wonderful. Now, when we talk about the restaurant industry in general, everyone is like, oh, my God, they are struggling. And one of the weird things that I notice is that the discrepancies, not only across the country, but like I live in Long Beach, California, they shut down the ability for people to have outside eating. But then when you go a city over, that city is allowed to have outside dining. And I'm like, okay, it's so different. And COVID isn't that different from city to city, but it has to be affecting your industry because as the restaurants suffer, your company has to feel the effect.
Absolutely. So, and it does vary depending on where you are in the nation. So what we're finding is that, you know, our industry is a recession-proof industry. It really is. It's a great career opportunity for the service techs, those trade technicians. We need them. So if anybody watching wants to get into the trades, this is a good one. And we have scholarship opportunities as well. But, you know, depending on the laws in the city and what's open, what's not open. I know here in Dallas, I think today we're locking it back down, the restaurants to 50%, closing all the bars again because of our, I guess our numbers are rising. So we have been impacted and there's probably going to be some service companies that close, but we, you know, we got knocked a little, but we're going to, I mean, we're vital. There's no way that you cannot have our technicians, our services are vital. So we're not going to go anywhere. We've been knocked a little bit, but we're doing pretty good.
Did you pivot any aspect of your business?
Absolutely. So for my business, where I'm at here in DFW, it, you know, we've figured out that how to operate basically with less in-house staff. So some of our processes, and you can talk to any service company, and I guarantee that they've completely changed the way they do a lot of their back-end processes. The industry as a whole, it's kind of old school. I can tell you up until probably 10 years ago, we still had a wall that had every service call printed on it, you know? So now we're on tablets. And so we're starting to get into that technology, but it's been pretty slow to change. And COVID's definitely kind of kicked that into high gear. You know, you want to survive, you got to be innovative. You got to think of ways to be able to do it with a lot less and a lot less manual touches.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Katie, I want to come back to you, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And I think he has some expertise as well on houses and making them effective. Mr. Jason Lockhart. Jason was born in Gardena, California, right down the street from where I am now, about 15 minutes away, where he grew a love for design and architecture. He has over 20 years experience in the architecture and interior design industry. He has worked on several renovation and remodeling projects in both the residential and commercial spaces, several of which had projects cost over $20 million. Good morning, Jason, how are you?
Good morning, how are you? And happy to be here.
I am happy to have you.
Just a little on me. My background, as you said, is in architecture, but now I do more of the marketing side because I'm actually the part owner in a architecture firm here within the Dallas area, Bedford, actually. And we've had it since 2008-ish, right after the housing debacle. That's when we had opened up our architecture firm, ironically enough. And so I've been at this for a while. I've actually taught in the School of Architecture at Southern University and at LSU. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, some of my classmates, they had came to me and we had talked about opening up our own architecture firm. And so that's when we had opened it up in 2008. Mm-hmm. So around 2012, one of the interior designers that we work with, because we do a lot of commercial school design and mixed-use design. So with a lot of the school design, we hire interior designers to help us out. Mm-hmm. And one of the interior designers reached out to me because I did a lot of the marketing for our architecture firm, and she asked us to do marketing for her. Mm-hmm. And so I had started to do some marketing for her, had some success. And shortly after, a few months later, she had referred us some other interior designers and then some contractors and some roofers. And then about a year later, we had opened up Kitchen and Bath Marketing Solutions. So that's what I have now. And so that was in 2014. And so I've been heading up that division. I still have the architecture firm, but I'm really focused on the digital marketing side. And we focus on marketing for interior designers and remodelers and residential architects. And we've been at this for a while. This year has been interesting with the coronavirus, but I'm the type that I always, if you hand me lemons, I'm gonna figure out how to turn that into lemonade. And so I said, I'm gonna use this time wisely. I had talked to my team, everybody on my team. I said, okay, how are you gonna use this time to enhance where we are on the other side of this? And they asked me the same thing. So what are you gonna do, Jason? And I said, well, one of our clients about a year and a half ago, she had mentioned that you all have a lot of knowledge, but you ought to think about writing a book. And I was like, okay, well, I don't have the time, but you know, I'm gonna think about that. So one of the positives of the coronavirus is I actually had the time to write the book, and it was published in June. And this is it here, The Complete Guide to Internet Marketing for the Kitchen and Bath Industry. So that's one of the things I've done. And so this whole year, we've really focused on reaching out to interior designers and remodelers, sharing information with them, helping them get out of this rut that we're in right now, where the housing industry and real estate has been booming in a lot of markets. Really within the Dallas area, housing hasn't missed a beat, but there are certain areas or, you know, around the US that are being hit harder than others. And so we are reaching out to a lot of interior designers and remodelers to share our knowledge to help them out as much as we can.
Absolutely. Now, I see that synergy there between you and Katie. One way or another, your focus seems to be on the same industry. Maybe there's some way you can both work together.
Yeah, exactly. And we like to partner with a lot of companies because that's one of the things that we, you know, focus on is synergies on where we can help each other out. And we partner with a lot of companies. One of the main organizations we work with is the National Kitchen and Bath Association. Mm-hmm. And that's the main, you know, association for the industry that we represent. And so we've done a lot of webinars with them. You know, we do a lot of training. So I'm one of the CEU providers to do trainings for them. So we like to do partnerships. So that's something we're all about.
Absolutely. Katie, what do you think of that partnership?
I think that we could talk after this. So we're all commercial. So anything that kitchen, that is where we live. So for sure.
Absolutely. And we talk about kitchen proofing, house proofing, but how do you porn proof your house or your home or your children, Joshua? What do parents need to know?
Well, parents need to first understand you're not going to porn-proof your kids with filters, with not giving them devices, with anything like that, unless you live in a cave that has a big boulder at the entrance, because your kids have to go out into the real world. And, you know, I have, when I've given presentations and whatnot, I get a lot of parents who say to me, yeah, I understand everything you're saying in education. I don't think my kid's ready for that. But we've got filters on their phone. And I was, you know, congratulations, you've locked down one device out of the 4.2 billion smartphones in the world. And what happens when they are out in the real world? What happens when they're, you know, your 11-year-old son is in seventh grade and in the locker room for the first time for gym class, and one of his friends brings out his phone and there's something from Pornhub on it? What is your 11-year-old kid going to do? What is he going to say? How is he going to react? If you don't know this, you haven't porn-proofed your kid. So if you want to porn-proof your kid, and this goes for the daughters as well, because young girls, it turns out, they've got sexuality and they've got curiosity, just like the boys, and they're starting to look at it almost as much as the boys. The key is education. And I think that the number one place where parents are making their missteps these days, it's in number one, not starting early enough in warnings. Not doesn't have to be graphic, just has to be age appropriate. And number two, I think that parents need to understand that it's a big world out there, and it's not a matter of if your kids are going to see porn, it's a matter of when. So it needs to be addressed, and it's not part of the birds and the bees speech. It's part of the addiction speech. It's part of the speech of, you know, if you find an open beer, you don't drink it. If you find a cigarette, you don't smoke it. I think it's part of that discussion with children, not necessarily part of the birds and bees discussion, but because of the content of the material, that tends to get intertwined with the birds and the bees, and that's not the place for it.
Absolutely. Jason, have you ever had that conversation?
I haven't, and I actually asked Josh this earlier. I actually have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old. So I asked him, so how do I prepare for that? Because honestly, that was not anything in my mind. But hearing you, I'm like, okay, I need to start thinking about this.
Well, when it comes to kids the age of yours, I usually just say, you know, you don't even need to use the term pornography. If you are watching television, if you have a friend or a cousin that has a tablet and you see pictures of naked grown-ups on it, let me know. I want to know about it. And leave it at that. It's not a bad thing. It's not a shameful thing. You know, usually kids are curious and they discover things. You don't want to make them feel bad about it because they'll keep looking and not come tell you about it. Right. So something really basic like that, if they run into it. And then I think also just, you know, kind of part of the stranger danger speech, you know, you don't let anybody ever take pictures of you without your clothes on, and you don't take pictures of anybody else without their clothes on. And if somebody asks you to do that, or you think you want to do that with somebody else, come tell me so we can talk about it. And that's that. You know, that's all they need to know about pornography at 5, 6, 7 years old. I think you can tend to be a little more graphic at 9 or 10 because they're probably using devices on their own a lot more. And they should know that, you know, it's a little bit more harmful. And then when you're talking 11, 12, 13, these are the ages where kids start seeking it out. These are the ages where kids actually start watching it. And I think you do need to be a little bit more direct there. I do think you need to let them know about some of the potential problems. I think the way that we deal with 13, 14-year-old boys is that we tell them about the phenomenon of porn-induced erectile dysfunction, which is hitting a ton of guys who are in their late teens and early 20s. Essentially, this is erectile dysfunction, but if you have pornography playing in the room, you can perform. It's kind of this odd little twist that the brain is conditioned because you conditioned it for the dopamine, for the oxytocin, for the serotonin, all of the pleasure chemicals. You can perform with pornography playing in the room. I've dealt with a couple in my coaching side of things who have had to deal with this, and it's rough because they 20-year-old woman, 22-year-old guy, they cannot function as a normal couple sexually because he blew his pleasure receptors out when he was 16 or 17. And I think that if we can tell our 13 and 14-year-old boys about this, it might make them think twice before they, you know, engage in too much pornography. Telling them that, you know, their equipment can largely be broken by too much pornography, which we know it's not just a scare tactic. We know that actually happens now. I think that's something that every 13, 14-year-old boy needs to know about, because I think some of them will start making better decisions. 13, 14-year-old heteronormative boys want a girlfriend. But if they can't get one right now, they'll take the next best thing. But they don't realize that next best thing is eroding parts of their brain away. So we need to be there as parents to tell them about this, to make it age appropriate, and to make it, you know, relevant to their life in that moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so also when we're talking to our kids, not just about these aspects, because one of the things that we were discussing is COVID. And so many of our children right now are trying to be mentally healthy, trying to be creative, trying to find other ways to expand because their world has completely changed. Even for you, Jason, being an adult, you talked about what you went through. You were focused on one thing and then you said, you know what, now I have time to write this book. Have you seen with your family the stress that a lot of parents experience during COVID and trying to find that creative outlet for our children?
Oh, I had that with my kids, having to, because I had to home teach. So mm-hmm. having to teach them at home was a stressor because mm-hmm. I'm having to, and I had to get used to this because in March when this all happened, I'm having to learn how to teach them. Even though I taught at the college level, having mm-hmm. to teach elementary school age and your mm-hmm. own is completely different. And one of the teachers had asked me, she said, haven't you taught before? I said, yeah, these are 18, 19 year olds. I'm having right. to teach a 5 and a 7 in my own, like that's completely different. And right. they don't want to listen to me because I'm daddy. So yes, that was hard. And when I was actually talking to clients, I would have to have a disclaimer where you're going to hear something in the background. After a while, I was hearing from others, oh, I have that happening too. It's no big deal. But at first, it was in my subconscious, like be quiet, you know, but yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a stressor.
Oh, wow. How about you, Katie?
Absolutely. So we were actually, my kids went back to school in August. They did in-person school, my 5-year-old and my 12-year-old. But we were quarantined last month for a couple of weeks because my 3-year-old got COVID. And teaching my, you know, 12-year-old was fine, but that 5-year-old, that kindergartner, and those, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm not made for that. Trying to work and trying to make sure that they're doing their stuff, and it's not fun at all.
Do you all?
But I do have a question for Joshua.
Okay, let me ask one first. I'm curious, both you and Jason, I have older children, so I'm really not doing much teaching. I'm more doing nagging that they get their homework done. Do you worry, and I had a conversation with a friend of mine who also has kids my age, and we were glad we weren't in your position because we were wondering, do you think that there is going to be perhaps a generation, or not a generation, but a age swath of children who are not getting certain social skills right now? You can teach them everything in the world. They're still not getting certain social skills they get in a environment around other children and different kinds of children. Do you think that there are going to be any lasting marks at all if this COVID thing, you know, goes on at least through the end of this school year?
I think so. I mean, I think that it's going to be vital in what that generation and how they develop. You know, a lot of kids, they don't come from very good circumstances and having to be home. You know, they don't have those teachers, those people that kind of look out for them, make sure they're getting fed, make sure that, you know, I think that, and they're isolated. The kids are isolated for the most part. You know, it's hard. Isolation is hard.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to shape them for sure.
Yeah. And just adding on to that, I'm a hugger just for my mom. I'm a lovable person. And my kids are the same way. So when they see people, they want to hug them. And so now I have to be mindful of that, like hold up, and I have to explain why. And they're not understanding, like I used to hug them before, but why not now? And so So that's, you know, an issue.
I think that's an excellent question, Joshua. It reminds me of a conversation I had years ago before all of this. So I'm curious to see how this pans out. I had a friend of mine, we were having this discussion because in California, the whole K-12 program, the homeschooling was huge. And I had never been a fan of it because of the social aspects. And so my friend, her son was homeschooling. She's like, it's wonderful. He has no problem. He learns and everything. And I'm like, I don't know. I just think the social aspect. Her son wound up becoming the valedictorian of his class, walked out to give his speech, looked out at the audience, broke down in tears, and ran off the stage. And I was like, I think I just proved my point. You know what I mean? Like, I think I was right. You know what I mean?
Isn't that the best time to say I told you so?
Yes. So I don't know what's going to happen now because it's like you have all these kids. Yes, they're learning. And I'm like you, Joshua. My kids are 23 and 26. Because if I had to teach them, my poor babies, I don't know what would happen. But Katie, you did have a question for Joshua.
I did. So, you know, for like my 12-year-old, what would be a good resource? Like if I wanted to look into more before I have that discussion with my 12-year-old about pornography, what resources, where would I go to find information, maybe some things that I can talk to her about?
Well, thankfully, the internet is starting to be absolutely full of that kind of stuff. I have a few favorites that are on my webpage, which is recoveringpornaddict.com. If you go to the resources page, it's being revamped right now, so they may not be there this second. I've got somebody doing a revamp on my site, but I do have resources there for parents. I mean, anything on the internet is fine. There's a really popular book. It's called something like Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. Very popular, but that's for a younger group, you know, perhaps somebody who's got kids Jason's age. Yeah. But I think that, you know, it's you can at 12 years old start to talk about this with them.
Their friends are.
And yeah, just from your point of view, share, you know, without shaming, without judgment, share what your values are. They're going to make their own values anyway as they get older. Yeah. But I would treat this, you know, 5-year-old kids want to know what to do to cross the street safely. You know, 13-year-old kids want to know what to do to get through high school without being a social pariah. Kids are always wanting to learn. I mean, even as adults, we're always wanting to learn. And I think that if you just share some of your wisdom of, you know, this is, we either think this is not a healthy thing or this is a healthy thing. You know, sexuality is a wonderful thing. It's why we're all here, but it can be unhealthy too. That's, you know, the proliferation of something like OnlyFans right now. There's more than, by the end of this year, over 1 million people, 85% of them women, will have joined OnlyFans between the 18 and 25 year old age group. Now, most people over 35 have no idea what OnlyFans is. That's how quickly technology changes now, in that there is a giant do-it-yourself pornography culture out there. And I worry that these 12, 13, 14 year old girls especially are going to start not necessarily doing this, but they're going to start seeing their cousins, seeing their friends' older sisters making a lot of money doing this. And we're already dealing with kids who have less stigma towards pornography because it's out there, have less stigma towards nudity because our generation has less stigma towards nudity than our parents did. And that just keeps getting passed down, especially with what's in our media today. So we need to come at it from their point of view, not from a bit of, you know, our views towards sexuality, towards pornography, towards life are antiquated for our kids. And we need to think about the world that they are in today, which I believe, like I said, I believe pornography production is going to be as big of a problem as pornography addiction for the younger people, younger adults, very soon or sooner than later. So it's porn proofing your kid is tough, but start with what you believe, start with what's at your center, and then start talking about the world that she lives in, the world where her friends have their devices and their friends are, you know, and I hate to say this, starting to have sex, starting to fool around, starting to look at porn regularly.
Everything is already changing. I hear you, Joshua.
This is all happening.
Yes, I want to bring Josh into the conversation. You've been sitting over there so patiently. You're passionate about health and wellness. Conversation's been going everywhere. What are your thoughts so far, Josh?
I think it's interesting because I'm 28 years old. So, you know, in terms of the discussion that we were just having.
Yes.
I kind of sit between the two. So I'm not quite in the young, demographic, and I'm not quite, you know, I'm not a parent. I think that the porn is obviously an addiction that, it's a troubling addiction, right? At the same time, I think it kind of falls into that category as well. It's just the sort of the technology addiction too. So I think it's almost a side effect of just having your phones and access to that information all the time, you know? So, you know, and you're talking about like OnlyFans and we're talking about, so I think it's more about like sort of a wearing down, I guess, of the, what they say, like of the social fabric or sort of like, you know, social interaction where, you know, it's just like that people aren't really having those, I guess, intimate connections or face-to-face connections or whatever, which kind of goes back, it kind of ties together the homeschooling point that you're making, and then also sort of this point, like the pornography issue, which is just that we don't have, we're not having, like I said, the normal connection that we used to because of the way that we're sort of interfacing with technology and using that to mediate our conversations and our connections with other people. So
as a 28-year-old, how have you been able to find that social connection in this global pandemic?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely I've been someone to, I didn't go out really, during that time. I was obviously in lockdown, respecting lockdown, but at the same time, I was connecting with other friends, when I could. Dinners at their houses or little bonfires and that kind of thing. We've done that recently. And it's nice to just, it's nice to have that sort of, community or whatever. What I will say too, is I've been using, I've been working a lot. So I've been, at least connecting with other people through, Zoom conferencing and video conferencing, but it's definitely not the same. So, I think that I miss that. And I think that we all miss that sort of, that level of intimacy and community that you can have with other people. And I think that, that's kind of one of the things that I'm trying to build with my company as well, is that, it's not really a vertical hierarchy of sorts. It's more of like everyone sort of pulling in the same direction, training here, brands here and that kind of thing. So, I definitely am all for as much community as we can possibly build together.
When you say pulling people together with your team, was that a direct result of COVID, or is that something you've always tried to do within your company?
Yeah, no, I think it's more just the way that the structure of the company is set up. So what I will say is, thankfully, the coronavirus is sending most commerce online, right? So people are having to buy things digitally, or because, we can't go to stores as some stores were shut down or whatever. So thankfully my business hasn't suffered, and maybe even sort of tailor-made for, this time when people have to make purchases online. But the community aspect of it is just, that's kind of, like I said, it's a network model. So it's rather than just an agency, which is more, I feel of like you have your team on this side and you're directly, working with individual clients. Here it's sort of this cross-pollination almost of sorts, where everyone sort of like has access to everyone else and can all work together and all that kind of stuff. And the last thing I'll say is that kind of the structure of affiliate marketing and performance marketing is it's the win-win structure. So it's like all parties involved are basically creating a revenue share. They're splitting the cost or the earnings from each of the sales, because they're all sort of pulling their own weight in the transaction. And so when you have that set up, then there's no one losing or whatever. We're all sort of going for the same goal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, Jason, I want to talk to you because one of the questions I wanted to ask earlier, we're talking about technology and some of the changes. I know there have been a lot of changes in the architecture industry. And one of those things, we had a guest yesterday, not in architecture, but just someone who builds homes. And he was talking about the technology that can now be used. So I know with architecture, you're now using more technology to create the building per se than prior, correct?
Yes. And there, just the technology within the last decade has changed. Because when I taught at LSU, I was the one, because when I was hired, I was the youngest hired. So all of the older professors said, he's the young buck, so let him take all of the computer classes. So I was having to, in the time when I asked, when I had began teaching the computer classes to when I left, the change was dramatic in terms of the software, how it was used, the application of it. So technology is ever changing. Yeah,
absolutely. I was watching, I don't know if anyone saw it, Kevin Hart's new movie on Netflix. And he was talking about how, I think it was Jerry Seinfeld, I don't know who it was, but he had a feature in his house that he had this electric stove in his house. And so now Kevin Hart wants this stove, and he's talking about how they didn't offer it to him and he didn't know that this was a feature in the house at that time. But it was talking about how you can look at different features in a house and have them designed without actually having to design the house. So if you want a fire stove, or if you want a baseball court, whatever it is, they can design it virtually before actually creating it physically.
Yeah, whatever you could dream up, it can be designed and drawn. So, I mean, technology nowadays has made honestly, on just to head back to my teaching days, has made it a little harder to teach, because it's harder to teach design if you start design on a computer.
Right.
Usually you want to design with your hands and with your mind, and it's hard because the computer, if you don't know how to use the program, it'll hinder how creative you are. And so the computer can hinder you in that sense. And so I saw that firsthand when I taught. If you didn't know how to use the program, you only did so much because you only did what you knew how to do, but you were not as, you know, creative. So it can be a hindrance as well.
So basically, when you look at the student and they just create a one bedroom house and that's all they create. And
then because that's all they knew how to do on the computer.
Right. But you're like, wait a minute, we can build castles and this could be a 16 bedroom with a bowling alley and a heliport, all of this. So it's them being able to imagine it. Katie, do you use a feature like that in technology in what you do?
It is used in our industry. For the service side, probably not so much, but on the design side, from like the consultants and, you know, even the manufacturers making the equipment. And then, you know, when we come in, what they designed on the computer may not actually work the way that it needs to work in real life. So, you know, you got to maybe have a service tech come in here. Well, this piece of equipment can't go next to this piece of equipment, even though this is the way they designed it, because, you know, it's going to produce too much heat and it's going to act, you know. There's a lot of variables. So we don't do it on the server side, but yes, in our industry, on the other side of the food chain, they do.
20 years, Katie, what has kept you in this service industry for 20 years?
Well, you know, this is one of the industries that you, if you know somebody in it, that's kind of how you get involved, or used to be. My dad was a service technician. When I was little, I would go to the job sites with him back before we had all these big regulations. You know, I'd climb on the ladder, go to the roof, hand him his tools. Can't do that nowadays. But so, you know, when I was 16, it was the after school job. I started out, it was just going to be summer job. And it's, I like the challenge. Every day is different in this industry. If you like problem solving, it's a good industry to be in. So I kind of just never left and worked my way up the ladder at the company that I'm with. And now I'm involved on, you know, the national level with the board of directors, but it's a great industry to be in. You know, the trades people, they're some of the best in the world. They're real salt of the earth people. So I like that. I like interacting with people all over the world that are involved in our industry, from making the equipment to all the way down to repairing the equipment and installing it like we do.
Absolutely. Now, twofold question for you, Katie. Number one, like you, I learned a lot from my father. As a kid, I was his customer service person. I was the one who answered the phones and took the jobs, you know, for him to go out. So my question to you is, number one, even though you were handing your dad the tools, were you that child that was excited to be doing it? Or you're like, why am I here with my dad again? And the second part of that question is, do you instill that in your children to come and be a part of what you're doing and to help out and to learn that entrepreneurial spirit?
So I did. I liked going to the job sites with my dad because, one, we got a lot of free food from the restaurants back then. You know, my dad's fixing
that.
That's
always that.
Give me a cheesecake or something. So, you know. But, yeah, so my kids, you know, obviously I'm not out in the service field. I'm in the office and I'm in my company. I do like the processes and procedures and kind of handle that side of it. And my daughters know what I do. I've brought work home. I do let, like, my oldest, she's probably knows a little more of what I do than my 5 and my 3-year-old, but absolutely. Working hard, and I'm always telling her, hey, you know, is there something she wants to, like, make jewelry? Well, you want to sell the jewelry? Well, how are you going to sell it? You know, who are you going to sell it to? What are you going to do? We talk about that. I'm all about my girls. They can definitely do anything they want in any industry they want. And they got to put the work in, though.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Joshua Shea, you mentioned that your children are older. Have you brought them into your passion and getting this message out? Are they, you know, part of your team?
Yeah, I mean, my son says that I never refer to him enough in what I'm doing, but I think he's just a little a glory hound. My daughter, absolutely. As a young woman, I want her to see what this industry does, especially on this, you know, production side of things. She is coming with me this weekend when I give my TED Talk to be my, you know, plus one, because she understands what I'm doing. I think she likes the whole marketing side of things. She likes helping people. And then just when it comes to being the parent side of things, having a 21-year-old and a 17-year-old are fantastic to learn from. You know, I have no idea what the kids are doing these days. I have no idea what the next popular app is going to be. I have no idea what their attitudes are. So having, you know, a son who's still, you know, in high school, and having a daughter who is, you know, in college and young and into the you know, young adult world really helps me understand what's happening. And that's a lot of how I deal with them is asking questions about what people are seeing, what people are thinking. And they understand that it's almost a research thing. I'm not accusing them of anything. I'm not lecturing them. So we're able to have pretty decent conversations that can actually, you know, because we are for the most part adults, can get a little graphic, but we all understand what it is I do, how I talk to people. And, you know, I there are some people I can talk to graphically. You know, it's very easy to talk to a 25-year-old very graphically. You don't talk to his 48-year-old mother as graphically. And that's, you know, that's what having my kids involved helps. Having my wife involved, asking her questions about when we were going through the early recovery. One of the niches I've really found is in helping the female partners of male addicts, because they suffer in a way that so many partners of addicts don't, with betrayal trauma. And I've been studying that, and I've been writing a lot about that and working with women in that area. And I find that absolutely fascinating. And I didn't know what my wife was going through at the time because I was so wrapped up in my own stuff. So now going back, kind of doing an autopsy on how did she feel before? How did she feel in early recovery? When she learned things, or if there was staggered disclosure over what I did, you know, how did that make her feel? And understanding how it worked in my life has been just as important as understanding the actual addiction to me in being able to reach out and help others.
That is very powerful. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with Josh Kennedy.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in and having me on the show today. And thank you for all the other panelists and guest speakers for sharing a little bit about themselves and their businesses. If you wanted to take anything away, I would just like to, you know, talk about, you know, personally, my business, Imagine Marketing, and sort of how we are, I guess, serving a lot of different, you know, a lot of different people. So we're serving businesses in terms of we're bringing on brands, and we don't charge for onboarding costs to get set up. We are working with different partnerships in order to sort of give them access to brands and get them really good rates to work with the brands. And then we're also, like I said, we're working with these people that are sort of, you know, being trained and, you know, in their spare time when they could be driving an Uber or delivering pizzas or whatever the food delivery service is. It's like, this is an opportunity for them where we don't have to do that. They don't have to beat up their car. So yeah, just the sort of the community aspect that, of the company that I have. And if you have anyone that's interested in any of those, you know, different sort of segments of my company, or interested in even just more digital marketing training and stuff like that, I have all that at my disposal if they're interested. The name of my website is, or the name of the company is Imagine Marketing. The website is imagine-affiliate.com, and I can be reached at josh@imagine-affiliate.com. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Absolutely. Katie, what do you have for us?
Well, I would like to use this. Well, thank you for having me, by the way, but I would like to use this time to let everybody know, if you have a kid in high school, if you are, you know, contemplating what you want to do with your life, but you know that you want to do something that's very hands-on, and you have any kind of mechanical aptitude, this is a great industry. You can travel all over. You're not bound to one location because this is all over our industry. You can make six figures a year. It's a great career. So you get paid to learn the trade as well. It's debt free. They pay you to teach you how to do it. And we have scholarship opportunities. So if you go to cefesa.com, C-F-E-S-A.com, there is a link on there and you can see our $2,500 scholarship. We have one this fall, two in the spring, and we need a technician. So if you know somebody or if you're interested, reach out to me. We need technicians.
So. Do they have to be in the DFW area?
They don't, all over. CEFESA is the national organization. So anywhere that you are, and we're looking for, there is not a service company around that is not hiring technicians because the average age of technicians, they're getting ready to retire, you know? So we need this younger generation to step up, learn the trade. It's a great career opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you, Katie. Jason, what do you have for us?
All right. So I would like to say thank you for having me here. I enjoyed the time. And if you are in the design or the remodeling industry, go to our website because we are here to help. One of the things that we have implemented this year is we have a resource library. And on there, we have articles, we have training videos, we have webinars to help you. And our website is kitchenandbathmarketingsolutions.com, or you can also use the acronyms KABMS.com. And so go to our website. We have a resource library that's there to help. And also on the 16th of this month, Wednesday, December 16th, we're going to have a webinar slash workshop on how to develop your marketing plan for 2021. This is the same exercise we had, we use with all of our clients at the end of the year to prepare for the next year. So that's going to be an awesome webinar. We're going to have a workbook. It's going to be a 22-page workbook. We're going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to work on your plan for next year. So go to our website, sign up for that. If you cannot attend live, if you sign up, you'll have a replay again at our website, kabms.com.
Is your book available there as well?
Yes, and it's on Amazon. And I just heard last week that it's the top remodel and interior design book out there. So I was happy to hear that. So.
Congratulations. Give us that book name again, please.
It's The Complete Guide to Internet Marketing for the Kitchen and Bath Industry.
Love it, love it, love it. Thank you, Jason. Joshua Shea, please go ahead and take us out.
All righty. Did you know that next to Monday morning, people say that the day and time they find most depressing is Sunday evening? Well, I can fix that. This Sunday night, depending on where you are in the country, maybe it's late afternoon, I will be giving my first ever TED Talk, which means I am either going to fail spectacularly in front of thousands of people watching, or I'm going to do very well. Either way, it should be fun to find out what happens. So if you want to watch my TED Talk about porn addiction, there are another six TED Talks on different topics. If you want to learn more about it, you can stream it absolutely free. That's one of the few decent things about COVID, is anybody can come to a TED Talk now online. Visit TEDxHartford.com. Click on the buy tickets button. You can set your price at zero or donate if you want. That's TEDxHartford.com. If you have any questions about porn addiction or want to reach me, RecoveringPornAddict.com is the place.
Wow, I like that. But I like what you said about Sundays. I never knew that. But I always tell people Sunday to me is that day I just try to get over because I'm a go, go, go kind of person. I like to do business, talk business. And no one wants to talk business on Sunday. So I'm like Monday morning. I'm like, yes, it's Monday. I can get back to my energy of what I love to do. So I just want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live. as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show doesn't mean you're not important. We still need your support. Please go ahead and share the show. But don't just watch the show. Don't just share the show. Please support our guests. Visit their websites. Their information is in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media. Send them a message. And when you reach out to them, please let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.